This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark. Brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
Robert Stark here. I'm joined here with Alexander Onimus. Alexander, it's great speaking with you.
Likewise, Mr. Stark.
To start things off, can you give a brief background information about yourself and explain? You contacted me, we were talking about an interview, but if this may come as a surprise, I think, to a lot of the audience and kind of the subject matter who listen to the show and follow my Substack, you're a supporter of critical race theory and more like racial leftist ideas, which may seem at odds to a lot of people who generally follow the show. But if you want to just kind of like give a brief introduction and kind of explain how you came to the conclusion of support for CRT.
Okay, well, first of all, I really don't like being fringe. I am a Californian, lifelong almost, and I support DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and all of my political views are socially acceptable. And more philosophically, I am a Popperian, meaning that I believe in negative utilitarianism, minimizing suffering in an open society, as Karl Popper did, and critical rationalism, also what Karl Popper believed in.
So do you also accept HBD?
HBD depends. I am definitely not a racialist. I think that there are no racial genes, but there are some genes that have separated a population since the sub-Saharans, some of them left Africa and became modern day non-sub-Saharan people.
How do you think CRT relates to HBD? Because would you say that both the CRT argument and the more colorblind meritocratic argument, do you think they both hedge upon blank slateism?
No, I wouldn't say so. You see, no one can ever know 100% if a gene is going to become a trait. So when someone is born with genes, or two people reproduce, more specifically, no one knows what the offspring is going to be like because genetics are fundamentally probabilistic. No one knows how if a gene is going to become a certain trait or not.
What do you see as the main problems with the colorblind meritocratic arguments?
Well, like I've said, I am a very orthodox, politically correct person. I stand firmly against race-blind conservatism, as did Martin Luther King, and presently as does Tim Wise, the anti-racist activist guy. For one, a lot of social stratification has to be explained directly through race. A lot of the current unions are not as strong because people are divided along racial lines, as is the case with a lot of welfare state things. I think Tim Wise pointed this out, that people don't want to pay a certain amount of taxes because the beneficiaries are not going to look like them. That is paraphrased, I think, what Tim Wise tweeted one time.
Do you see irony in that both woke people, more woke people, and more kind of alt-right types end up coming to some of the same conclusions, because a lot of alt-right people would actually probably agree with a Tim Wise statement that people don't want to pay for people who are different. They'll just say like, yeah, I don't want to pay for them, and that's a good thing. But do you see irony in like sort of a horseshoe theory, how the both sides might end up coming to the same conclusions that the colorblind middle would not?
No, I actually think that Europeans, as I've explained in some of my writings, they are better off in an open society than in an exclusive, like white nationalist society. Like I said, I am an anti-racist advocate. All my beliefs are politically acceptable, and I think that Northwestern Europeans are much better off in an open society than in a fascist ethnostate.
What are your thoughts on the whole concept of implicit bias?
That it is inherent to all people, and that the implicit biases of the most powerful group are the most problematic because they could hurt the most human rights.
So you take implicit bias. The concept is definitely legitimate. Everyone does things by implicit subconscious motives that they're maybe not explicitly aware of. Question is, should they be shamed or corrected? Or could you make a case that because they're more intuitive, that they're more rooted in like what's natural? So obviously implicit bias is legit, but how should people deal psychologically and politically and socially with their implicit biases?
We should deal with them not in an authoritarian way, but in an open societal way that tries to summon the best out of all people. And if someone is caught having an implicit bias, they should, depending on the thing, they should maybe get a slap on the wrist and they should be corrected. Like, let's say it's a Northwestern European person that is very implicit biased. I oppose the death penalty, and I think that depending what it is, they should be reminded that Northwestern Europeans are better off underneath an open society than a closed one. That would be like the first thing, and then they should maybe get therapy, or they should somehow be rehabilitated.
How does CRT relate to the declining white population? And does the Progressive Project need a certain amount of the Northwest European white demographic to remain viable?
Well, for one, a lot of the declining white population is because whites really don't want to be subject to their own mediocrity, as every race has some level of mediocrity, but white mediocrity is a big dangerous force, as is white dysgenics. And if whites like really clung to a homeland, they would inevitably breed to be more conformist and not as, unfortunately, not as intelligent. That or the environment would cause that. And they would become more. Their civilizations would lose their value that they currently have.
So, do you think in a future where, say, whites are a minority, do you think whites will become more ethnocentric or reactionary as a response to that?
I think they will, and I think there's a good and there's a bad way to do that.
You're against using the term eugenics, but what you say is you're for some fusion of CRT, but with transhumanism. So, basically, using artificial wombs in the future to create more Northwest European whites to pay tax revenue for slavery reparations? Is that basically what you're advocating for?
Not necessarily just slavery reparations. I think that a lot of current issues are the fault of Northwestern Europeans on some level, and the pacifistic way to get them to pay reparations is through the artificial womb mass reproduction. Like, some could argue the current Israeli-Palestine conflict is somewhat the British's fault, therefore mass cloning Anglo-Saxons who are willing to pay reparations and willing to have their clones pay the reparations is the right move, so both Israelis and Palestinians can get a good chunk of money, and that we can start having some real healing. So that's just one example, but it's not just for slavery.
Do you think having more like socialism and more social programs means like more? Does it require? Well, you initially said that you sort of reject this hyper-hereditarian viewpoint, but just speaking hypothetically, like, would do you think to have just like a stronger social safety net in general, you would need more people like white people and especially more well-off white people to reproduce more to sustain a more socialist society?
We would definitely need more liberal and progressive, more progressive North. We need a tax base that is of a guilty descent. So we need a tax base that is progressive and willing to pay the reparations. But much to the contrary, conservative whites are leading kind of the dysgenics of their or mediocrity of their own group, and thus are the big obstacle for progress. So more progressive liberal whites, less of the conservative ones.
Do you think the whole proposal about using artificial wombs to increase the numbers of Northwest European whites could win over more right-wing people or more ethnocentric white people to your position? Or do you think they would just vehemently have a reaction like, we don't want to be like used to like pay for people who hate us? Like, do you think that would be the reaction, or do you think you could find some common ground on a compromise?
Hopefully, we could find some common ground, but they would have to admit to their history of white guilt, and they'd have to accept some white guilt. And like I say, I reject the eugenics because I don't want anyone castrated against their will, and I completely support Dye. And the whole thing is a group can't pay its own reparations, and the money's got to come from somewhere, hence the artificial womb mass reproduction ideas.
Should the left and will and do you think the left will allow for whites to pursue like a positive white identity politics under the framework of liberalism, and is progressive white identity politics legit? Like, some people were talking about this with White Guys for Kamala.
Well, that's an example right there. I think, so long as it does not have unchecked white power, I think that it's considered benign, and it's considered in some ways even a positive way. Plus, if you listen to Biden's speech one time, he said that the white Europeans are becoming a minority and they deserve respect. Oh, so that's pretty much how it's going.
Can you give examples of policies where the left is better for whites than conservatives?
I read one in your article one time how the stay-at-home policy of being allowed to work from home is good for women that work to have kids. That's one clear
Oh, remote
example.
work, but I don't know if I think of that as left wing. I think that's just sort of a technological change that happened during the pandemic.
I know Elon Musk is very against remote work, and
That's true.
he's like the big chief on the right these days. So that makes me associate, at least in my head, remote work as with left wing politics.
So what happened is it did have like a very modest boost to white fertility, the whole work from home thing.
I learned that from you, yeah.
You're from Sacramento. One thing I noticed about visiting Sacramento, it strikes me as more racially integrated than other parts of California, like LA or the Bay Area. Do you see the future being more like racially integrated, or do you see the future as being more ethnic balkanization? And what has been sort of your experience from California?
It depends. Not all. I think racial integration is a great thing if it is for reciprocity and harm avoidance. But if it causes issues like the Chauvin and Freud thing, I think that was that Chauvin should be thrown in jail, and they should throw away the key. But he should definitely get seriously punished for that. And that's an example that integration is not necessarily a good thing. But if it's for harm avoidance and reciprocity, then yes, I think integration's a good thing. And being in Sacramento now, I think we're one of the more progressive parts of California, more, definitely more progressive than Bakersfield. Bakersfield, I think. So, yes, Sacramento maybe is kind of, I don't know if we're that integrated. What do you mean by integrated?
I mean, seeing different groups in the same geographic proximity, but it could have just been that I don't know if it reflects the metro. It could have just been reflecting that I was in a downtown area. I don't know, but that was just my general impression.
You have to figure downtown is full of immigrants and people of different ethnicities coming through California for like the first time. Where I live, it's mostly white.
Is that the suburbs?
Yes. So it's like the white flight thing is why it looks like that.
So you would say that reciprocity is the key foundation for race relations and politics?
That and harm avoidance. Reciprocity, those are two of the key values on the left. Reciprocity.
So the right wing, their response would be that CRT is a rejection of reciprocity. How would you make the case for CRT on a pro-reciprocity grounds to counter that argument?
Well, for one, whites are the most powerful group, so they. We can criticize them the most without any of them getting hurt. So, from a negative utilitarian minimized suffering point, CR, it's just fine to criticize whites because they're the most powerful.
You wrote about neurodiversity. Can you explain why you think the left is better on neurodiversity than the right?
For one, an autistic person might get a more lenient sentence or or a more lenient plea deal than with a more liberal judge than with a more conservative judge. Let's say an autistic person has an anger management moment and slaps someone. Under a conservative judge, they might go to jail, but under a liberal judge, they might have to just do some community service.
What do you think about the argument that autistic people are harmed by speech codes that some on the left support?
Unfortunately, that is very common, and it can depend. If an autistic person makes an honest mistake, I think. Most people on the left would be understanding if it's like something foolish just slipped out of them. But if it's like, but unfortunately, there are instances where they don't give enough direct warning to autistic people and they are just, and of course, I don't want to overgeneralize that. I think there should maybe be, and they maybe will be making a social security or disability checks just for autistics because it's very hard to get a job and keep it being autistic. And social security and disability checks are definitely a left-wing thing. So,
So you think conservatives are more likely to support like austerity on those programs?
what do you mean austerity? What is
Like
austerity?
scrapping those programs, getting rid of them.
Unfortunately, yes. Conservatives are really big on scrapping Social Security, and if they're not, it's going to raise inflation because they would cut taxes. But that's what happened under Trump. They cut taxes, but they kept the benefits, so that just caused a lot of inflation.
Why do you think there's a perception that autistic people are overrepresented among the alt-right? Do you think it does show like a failure of the left to address neurodiversity?
I'm not familiar with the with autistics being overrepresented on the alt-right. Who told you that?
I haven't seen specific stats, but it's sort of a, I'm saying it is kind of a stereotype. Do you think it's true? And if there is truth to that, do you think there it does show some failure of the left? So, I mean, the left, I wouldn't say they attack neurodiversity, but you do hear these complaints that figure more liberal figures will show disdain for, say, alienated young men, which could, which is not explicitly an attack on neurodiversity, but could be interpreted as such.
I don't know. Liberal figures will also be more lenient if those alienated young men get legal issues.
Well, the thing is, in Charlotte's, in the case of Charlottesville, which who was the alt-right figure, the perpetrator, who I don't really want to go into all like the legal details, but from what I've heard, there's allegations that he had that the I think his name was James Fields, I forget his name, but that he had autism, and that basically the book was thrown at him, and he was given like I think like a full-on like consecutive life sentence. So I don't, I'm not sure what that might be given. I've heard that case brought up.
Okay, I'm sure in
And it
liberal
was very
system.
politically charged.
What?
It was obviously very politically charged, but
Yes, but under a very liberal system, they might commute his sentence or lower it to maybe some time in jail. Then he might have to spend the rest of his life in a more humane mental asylum. Whereas under a more conservative state, you might just get the death penalty off the bat, unfortunately.
well, he got life in prison.
Okay, I don't know the case, but I think that that's better than the death penalty, because I'm against the death penalty.
What are some other specific policy issues that relate to neurodiversity that you can think of?
Some of there is a growing stereotype that a lot of transgender people are autistic. As far as transgenderism goes, I support it. And I think that gender is definitely a social construct, whereas sex is biological. So therefore, there is no need for anyone to undergo surgery or puberty blockers. What they can change their pronouns, their names, and dress however they want. But I do not see a need for any of the puberty blockers or surgery because gender is a social construct through and through, and sex is. There are infinite genders, but there are approximately three sexes. Approximately.
And you also wrote about asexuality. Do you want to talk about that article?
Yes, I myself am an asexual, that is a member of the LGBTQAA plus community. And the two A's are aromantic and asexual at the end. Some people abbreviate that as LGBTQ double, LGBTQI, and I just stands for identity. That means I am not attracted to anyone physically or sexually, and I need to stop making sounds. And
Do you still have a sex drive? It's just not attracted to any particular person, or you have no sex drive whatsoever?
I have no sex drive whatsoever, and I desire a mechanical or artificial womb, therefore, to have my children.
Why do you think that asexuality is seen as a more progressive issue while the incel issue is treated with disdain by the left?
Incels, I wrote an article about that too on ResearchGate. The big mistake with the incels is they blame the people who reject them. If they just blamed society as a whole and maybe became aromantics, that would be better off for them. Then they could join the LGBTQAA plus movement, and maybe they could even used artificial wombs to have children, or they could use surrogate birth to have women to have children.
Can you explain your article about how dysgenics can lead to social Darwinism?
How does social Darwinism is often conservative. I'm a mix of constructivist. I'm a constructivist. I acknowledge readability is heuristically true, though the law is constructivist. So, the dysgenics may lead people, whether by environment or by genetics, or maybe both, to become excessively conservative, and conservatism can lead to lowered IQs and less social, less artistic ability, and other deficits.
Can you talk about your spiritual views and how they intersect with your political views?
And one disagreement we may have is that I don't believe in reincarnation, whereas you do. It's
I generally say I'm agnostic about reincarnation. I'm open to it, but I'm agnostic about it.
I see it as reincarnation may be true, so we should make the world as good of a place as possible. So in the so if people do reincarnate, there's a nice place to go back to. There are other problems, though, I see with reincarnation belief, such as the collectivism and the social stratification may lead to, such as India's caste system, or as such as Plato's Republic. Plato believed in reincarnation, by the way. Therefore, I deduce what I think is true spiritually and what is not. I wrote an entire book called The Highly Theoretical Differential Equations of the Afterlife, and I'm a universalist, pretty much. I'm a universalist, Christian, Judeo-Christian, I'd say. You go ahead now.
Oh, so if you want to talk more about your book, that sounds interesting. What your book is about in spirituality.
It's on ResearchGate. I have another book called Respectfully and Unfortunately, The Improbability of In Danger Believing in Reincarnation. That book is like 132 pages long, the book arguing against reincarnation belief. And it is 132 pages long, and it also is structured differential equations in a very idiosyncratic manner. Now, nine people recommended it on ResearchGate, so I have found my audience, I guess.
And what is your interest in Neville Goddard and New Thought? Are you a proponent of New Thought?
Somewhat. I think people can positively and negatively manifest, but people should not bank on positively manifesting. But people also should recognize the risks of negative manifesting.
We're getting close to the end of the show. Do you want to, before I wrap up, do you have anything else you'd like to add? And do you have any websites that you'd like to plug?
Well, this has been a very nice interview, Mr. Stark. I can not thank you enough. I think I have spoken pretty fluently. What do you think?
Yeah, it was a great interview. Thank you so much.
Okay, and I have a ResearchGate website. I'm Alexander Onimus on ResearchGate.net, and I can send you that link, by the way.
Okay, great.
And
I'll link to it.
I am on Substack, where we met, and Twitter. I'm also on Twitter. And those are the only three I would like to share right now. Thank you, Mr. Star.
Thank you, Alexander Onimus. A great show.
Have a nice day.
That
Thank you for tuning in. You can follow Robert Stark on his Substack at robertstark.substack or on his website at starktruthradio.com. See you next time.